Hi, and welcome to Spartan Speak, a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. I am Graham Couch of the Lansing State Journal, here along with my colleague for the Detroit Free Press, Chris Solari. And this is a Monday, April 17th, 2 days after Michigan State's spring drills scrimmage game thingy for the football program.
We talk about practice.
Yeah, spring practice is what open spring practice to wrap up the spring at Spartan Stadium, which I had a decent crowd, beautiful day, 12,000 to 15,000 people. I thought that was sort of my estimate, there were a few interesting things. It's hard to gain a lot from that because it's not even a full scrimmage. It's like an hour of actual scrimmaging. But I thought there were a few interesting performances. The quarterbacks obviously were center stage because when you have an open quarterback competition, that's always going to be center stage until it's decided. And Chris, what were your primary takeaways from, and obviously you wrote about this as well, but what were your primary takeaways from Saturday?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is look at the format of it. There are so many people that want to say they're football fans, but never want to see or know how the sausage is made, if you will. And that's why I do like this format a little bit, because you can see what they do in drills. I mean, what you see isn't necessarily 100% representative of what a full practice is like, but it's a lot of it. There's a lot of drill work. There was less emphasis on, maybe install. I think that's something that you don't necessarily get there, but you get to see the drills. You get to see how and why guys move up or behind a little bit in the rep chart. And then when they did go to scrimmage, I think you did see why some of those guys were where they're at on the rep chart, or depth chart, however you want to describe it. I think probably right now, I know Mel Tucker likes to call it a rep chart, but I think right now it's especially a rep chart because when you get to the fall, that's when you start to say where your depth is. And I think the biggest takeaway, obviously, was that Peyton Thorne seems like he's still fairly comfortable in the lead at the quarterback spot, though I do think Noah Kim's probably a little closer than he was at the end of last year, and Caden Hauser has talent and looks like that he still needs work and seasoning. I think that was pretty clear in how those reps were divvied up, particularly with the final couple drills between ones against ones and twos against twos, and Caden Hauser standing and waiting and as practice ended for a chance in that little hurry up drill.
Yeah, no, I think, one thing that people should know is like they're very aware that they're being watched.
Yep.
And so how the reps are divvied up is intentional, right? And one of the things Mel Tucker said afterwards I thought was important. He said it was very indicative of how the spring went, because you could have a spring scrimmage that lies. You can have a guy who has 14 great spring practices and just has an off day in the spring game or whatever. And that's not, but so that's why that comment from him was important. Now it may not be, that everything that happened throughout the spring, there may have been days where Caden Hauser looked like the best quarterback. There may have been days where all sorts of things happened, but the reps they divvied out were, and the performances we saw were evident of that pecking order. I think what's sort of interesting, Chris, is I agree that if I had to bet on it, that I would say that Peyton Thorne is the most likely starter in week one. I think what we don't know and what we don't see is because, Noah Kim had three or four of the best five or six throws of the scrimmage. He also had one that was airmailed, another that should have been picked off.
Was short.
Yeah, so what you don't know is, because for Mel Tucker especially, he's talked about this, you just can't turn the ball over in that position. And so, yes, you want somebody who elevates you as a team, but you also have to have somebody who takes care of you. And what we don't know, and what is hard to tell is, and the coaches have a better sense of this from the whole spring, is, does Noah Kim do that too? Because if you've got a guy who's going to throw, he's going to make six or seven terrific throws a game, but he's going to have three or four that should be picked off. That doesn't do you a whole lot of good. And so, but we don't know that. And so I think that'll be interesting to watch as they get closer, how close that competition really is. And the other thing I think that's different now that I feel comfortable saying is, like, Peyton Thorne talked quite a bit about his injuries last year and how much that affected him. But what's clear is they thought their other quarterbacks weren't in a place last year, even with a diminished Peyton Thorne, to handle the mess that was going on in terms of other injuries around him at receiver and the losing and the pressure. Like, they still felt Peyton Thorne was the best quarterback. My sense right now is probably that if Peyton Thorne struggles this season for whatever reason, be it injuries again or just struggles, that Noah Kim is ready enough that would be a call that they made pretty quickly, I would think.
Well, you have to also look at what Noah Kim has done both last year and then in the practice on Saturday. I mean, that hurry-up drill, he was running the second-team offense, not just against the second-team defense, but also with a defense that didn't have its defensive line. And his touchdown pass was over a walk-on redshirt freshman defensive back who wasn't even on the roster last year. So those are the things that matter. You know, it's not just that he's delivered this ball in stride to Antonio Gates. It's that Antonio Gates is running against a kid that's, you know, 5'11 and 180 pounds and is a walk-on who didn't play last year, and he's a four-star recruit, and Noah Kim is a fourth-year guy making that throw. Well, it looks good, and it looked good on what he did against Ohio State and Minnesota when he got the chance. But that was also against their twos and threes. So it's different when the ones are there. And I think that's the one thing where Peyton Thorne understands what the game speed is, what it is necessary. And I think when he was talking about one of the thing that I thought that he said the most is comparing his body last year to a car, in that he tried to press the accelerator and he wouldn't go anywhere. And
which may also explain why the lack of QB sneaks and other things that they did. Now,
well, not even the QB sneaks. I mean, when they're struggling to run the ball, and
right,
the previous year he was your second best running option, all of a sudden, you know, that run against, like, Western Michigan, where he took the shot in the midsection, which might have been right around the hip flexor area, you know, and it kind of then he takes the shot the next week against Akron on a flea flicker when they don't have a run game established and no one's going to bite on that. You know, that, I mean, it makes a big difference as you build towards the end of the year. And, you know, in that early part when they were losing games, he clearly wasn't healthy. He said he spent more time in the training room last year than the two previous years combined. So, I mean, he's right. I mean, we see, even, you know, when I compile the injury report weekly, a lot of what my injury report is based on what we see during games. So if you see guys go out during games and then maybe come back, they're probably probable for that week. If you see a guy go and leave a game and doesn't come back, they're questionable. And then if you hear, you know, or you see a significant injury, you know they're out. But you don't know what happens Sunday through Friday. And as we saw, there were a number of defensive linemen who were out with injuries. Keon Coleman was out with an injury. Charles Brantley was out. I say injuries, but we don't know. They may have just been held out as a precautionary measure too. So there's a lot of things that do go on behind the scenes that contribute to things from an injury standpoint. But that Thorne admitted to it and basically said that he didn't feel like himself, I think was kind of a pretty big admission. But he also didn't throw anybody else under the bus. The fact that the offensive line wasn't blocking and allowed him to get blasted on a couple of those plays too.
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple of things with that. One is, and I understand the reasons for not being open about specific injuries during the season. Like, you don't want to say, if you've got a tear somewhere on your body, you do not want your opponent to understand where that is. Right. I get that. I also think letting that not be known until April is a detriment to Peyton Thorne. And that, like, at Penn State at the end of last year, like, that part of the press conference should be, you know, these guys are dealing with this or this, or at some point it ought to be more clear that there's more going on with somebody, because it just doesn't help I mean, Peyton Thorne's well aware that I would think if you had a vote right now of the fan base, who they want to be the starting quarterback. And this is even after Saturday, even after a lot of them who maybe were intrigued by Caden Hauser have a pretty good understanding that he might not be ready. I think Noah Kim would win hands down. And that's just because people have seen a lot of Peyton Thorne. And last year it was a lot. The offense wasn't that good. And the year before they sort of give, as he was developing, they sort of give more credit to Kenneth Walker. And you know, I think it's twofold. One, if you're going to give a lot of credit to Kenneth Walker, you can also say, well, then you can't just blame only Peyton Thorne for last year if he was banged up. But, you know, at a certain point, my question with Peyton Thorne is, because there were also decisions last year where you would see guys when you rewatch the film, you're like, wow, that guy was wide open. You just didn't see him. And so the thing that I want to see that happens with him, I think he is a smart quarterback. I think he's somebody who thinks the game well, who will someday be a really good coach because he can dissect defenses and all that stuff. The question is, will he get to a point where that translates what he understands pre-snap? Will that translate to production on the field and offense? And we don't know that yet. We'll see if he's healthy this year. We don't know. Those are the things we don't know. I think it's pretty clear at this point it's a two-man race. Peyton Thorne is probably the front runner based on experience. The schedule sets up decently in the fact that you've got two games at the beginning of the year where if that position was struggling against not great competition, you know, you could start to think about making a move. And then obviously what happens in Washington will I think determine, or against Washington will determine a lot. But
I also think that, you know, what's your expectations too? I mean, you know, if your expectations are to get to a bowl game, you can maybe make that kind of move. If your expectations are beyond that, you know, to win, to compete for a conference championship, you know, you're probably not making that move even until it's abundantly clear. Cause this isn't a situation like Andrew Maxwell to me. You know, Andrew Maxwell didn't have the full body of work that Peyton Thorne did from his sophomore year, right? I mean, you're still talking about a guy that's up there and he has the single season touchdown record, threw for 3,200 yards that year and had a dip last season. And I think that the other thing is funny is that people forgot that Peyton Thorne said this. Peyton Thorne said he was hurt back in October before the Wisconsin game. I wrote about it. I don't know why people forgot. I mean, maybe it's just the haze of everything that was happening at that point, but he said he wasn't 100% since the Western Michigan game back in the middle of October.
Yeah, so, but what I mean, though, is a quarterback saying I'm not 100%, everybody says that. The detail in which he sort of gave when pushed a little bit the other day is important, that it was, you know, the whatever third quarter, you know, the last play or third, whatever series it was against Western Michigan, that it was a tear in the lower body, then it was an upper body, you know, like those things are that they added up, that it was like six other things. Those details, you can see it.
I mean, you can go back and see it. I mean, it's the one where he sprinted out to the left and they took a late hit against Western. Yeah. And then the next week it was the flea flicker early in the first play of the second half against Akron, which, I mean, I guess you want to do that against Akron in a game that ends up 52-0, but you should probably know that that's probably putting your quarterback in a compromising situation there. He didn't call out the play calling on that. He didn't call out the lack of a run game that when they were still doing those flea flickers, that there was no run game for a defense to bite on. So, I thought, you know, he gave a good explanation that I think he was concerned about talking about his injuries. But especially with the specificity, even though it wasn't really specific as to what exactly it was, where it was. But that, I thought that, you know, that it was very, you know, I think about Brian Lewerke when he was hurt, when he had the shoulder issue after getting sacked at Maryland or against Maryland at home and wasn't throwing the ball well. I mean, you know, you want players to kind of say, I'm not feeling well. But then sometimes when they do it, they get a backlash for saying it from internal or from fans.
No, and look, I can't stand some of the paranoia in college football programs of that stuff. Yeah. Like Peyton Thorne is a fifth-year senior. He's a grown man. I really don't care what the coaching staff thinks on that stuff. Like, if you think, I mean, and I think the thing with Peyton Thorne too is you can tell it grinds at him that he's in a little bit of a competition here, that he's battling for his job, because he understands the mess he went through last year and how difficult it was.
And I think he has to even talk about the injuries himself and bring them up. I think there was a little frustration to that.
And that he was probably the only guy that could handle it. Like, they knew it would just – Noah Kim was not ready last year for what was – otherwise, they would have put him in, I think, if Thorne was hurt. And so I think that he understands that. He understands what he went through. But I also think it is fair to say that, you know, he's been the starter for 2 years. And, you know, he is not – and he's had some really good moments. But there's still a question about what his ceiling is actually as a passer. We don't know that. And I think it's fair. And so I think it's fair for people to be hopeful or excited about other quarterbacks or the potential for them. It's up to the coaching staff to fully, you know, measure these guys and have an understanding of who gives them what. And then also, I think there are decisions. Like, the program is an interesting point now because, like, this is not a team that's likely going to compete for a championship this year. This is a program that this year, what I think is important is you start to see some depth build. You see competence in coaching. You see some young players that look like they may have, you know, exciting futures. You start to see it a little bit, but I don't think they have the dudes yet to really compete. And so,
That's hard to say because we, you know, until we get to see what some guys like Keyshawn Blackstock and
we don't know
Mishe Adelea, those transfers. I mean, Mel Tucker on the BTN broadcast was telling that crew that this is the best group of transfers that he feels like he's brought in, and that says something to me.
Well, maybe they do.
I mean, you know, you think back to the, you know, coming out of that 3-9 year back in 2016, no one thought that team was going to compete with the guys that they had, but guys take that step forward, and, you know, you don't necessarily see it because spring and fall camp oftentimes are behind closed doors.
No, but you can have that 2017 year. You can have, but what you're not going to have, I don't think, because that wasn't a Big Ten contender, really. That wasn't a.
They were in contention into November. They lost Ohio State. I mean, everyone knew that Ohio State was going to win away, but
But this is a team that, yes, they could overachieve and go 9-3. I'm not saying that isn't possible. But where the program is, and sure, they could wind up with two or three transfers that are just above and beyond what people realize. And a couple of young players that are more ready than we thought. But ultimately, if this is – I think one of the questions at quarterback, and I tried to get this out of Mel Tucker earlier in the spring, like, if guys are relatively even, what matters to you? Do you go with the young guy who can grow into it, right? So I think that's the other equation here. What are you trying to get out of this year? You know, I think there's an argument, too, that if Noah Kim were to win the job, that's not necessarily great for the younger guys who are in the program right now, because Kim's got more time left in the program. If he has a big year, what does that mean? And I'm not saying they should decide it based on that. If Noah Kim is the best chance to win this year, they ought to play Noah Kim. But I think figuring out what they want to get, where their weaknesses are. And I think that the one thing that I do think that Peyton Thorne will have to perform to a level that we haven't seen from him consistently, to not have another quarterback get a look during the season. And I'm not saying he can't do that. He's a 2-year starter who may be healthy with better weapons and a better line than he's had a year ago. He may be ready to do that, and that may all happen. But I think he has to take his game to a level that we haven't necessarily seen consistently if he's just going to be the unopposed starter throughout the entire season, probably.
Yeah, and I think if you look at that, what will allow, and this isn't even just about Peyton Thorne. I think it's also about Noah Kim and whoever else would jump in there. How good can they be if Keon Coleman is on the sideline, right? I mean, did we really get a complete picture of that without seeing what Keon Coleman can do with each of those quarterbacks and do for each of those quarterbacks? I think that's, you know, that's clearly him not being in that practice, you know, gives you an idea of what exactly you didn't see more than anything. I think there was a lot of those kind of things, you know, between the defensive line injuries, Coleman not being out, Brantley not being out. You got to see individual work but you didn't necessarily get to see maybe how, like if you, like, for example, if Charles Brantley is your top corner and Keon Coleman is your top receiver, you didn't get to see those two go against each other, right?
There's a lot you didn't see.
You know, the offensive line, I thought, you know, between the drills and in the scrimmage work looked pretty good, but they're also going against, you know, a couple starters. There were times when guys in the defensive tackles were taking knees and sitting out so they can just give them a look but not get injured. You know, you had Jarrett Jackson and one of the other transfers, Chris Bogle, was out. Dre Butler, those guys, those are all defensive linemen that were out with injuries. And that's, you know, that what did you really see from the offensive line? Because listen, I mean, we could talk all day and all fall about the quarterback situation. That quarterback situation comes down to how well the offensive line is going to play. Right. I mean, there have been times that's, I think, with a running quarterback,
the whole offense really does.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to have a running game. You have to have not. And I think they look better at running back and deeper with guys that look a lot more like Big Ten running backs between Carter Mangum and Jalen Berger.
Yep. But Mangum looks like a guy open for them.
The holes going to open for them? And particularly if Thorne's the guy, we've seen in 2021 what makes Peyton Thorne a dynamic quarterback is his ability to pull and run on read options and use his legs as a weapon. You know, I think that's critical. That's critical, not just for him maintaining that job, but also for that offense to move the ball and be as dynamic as they were in 21.
Yeah, I think the good news for Michigan is, like, this isn't the best case scenario, because the best case scenario is you have a guy, a quarterback, who just is head and shoulders up here. And he's just, everybody, you know, it's obvious you got a dude. And that's, and what they have right now is what looks like capable guys. And, you know, some guys with some promise and some ability. But I think they also have a pretty high floor at the position relative to the rest of college. One of the things that, you know, there just aren't that many guys in the college game who really elevate their teammates. Like, if you look at the NFL draft this year, round one, Bryce Young elevates his teammates.
Yes.
The rest of the guys stunk last year's college quarterback, other than CJ Stroud, who didn't have to do it until the end because he was great in the playoff. But until that point, he had such good guys around him. But Will Levis had a horrible year. Anthony Richardson had it really wasn't that good. Like, these guys are first round picks and they didn't even do it. Michigan went to the playoff, did not have a quarterback that elevated guys around them. There just aren't that many guys that can do it. And it's even, you know, somebody who's as touted as Caton Hauser, who might turn out to be a really good quarterback in time. It is just rare for a redshirt freshman to come in and be a difference maker right away. And I think, you know, there was a lot of hype around him, and there's sort of some backlash to that hype. Now, I think the healthy thing there, though, is he's going to be able to grow now off the radar. And that is it. To me, he could have an amazing summer, show up more polished in August, and be in contention for the job, and this could change the picture of things. But if that were to happen, it would come from off the radar. Nobody's expecting him now going into August to win the job, and I think that's healthy for a young guy who's not ready for it.
Yeah, but at the same point, are you ever really off the radar when you're a highly ranked quarterback? I mean, even Damian Terry, yeah, totally. In his career. I mean,
eventually he was,
you know, I mean, but still, you know, you also got to a point at the end of that 2016 season where you had to see if Damian Terry could be the guy, and D'Antonio started him at Penn State, and you saw why he wasn't the guy, because he was frail and he got knocked out of that game, but made some okay plays. But, you know, that's the thing.
And he had lost his drive, too. I remember talking to him in that year that, like, you could just tell at some point he sort of knew his football career was coming to an end, was okay being a backup. At some point in his development, he lost the drive to be a great quarterback. And that's fine. Not everybody wants to have that. But that was another issue for him.
Yeah. Well, and then you mentioned, too, about looking at the draft board. I mean, look at some of those guys at the top of that board and look who's missing. A guy who was the dude last year, right, who won another national title, and Stetson Bennett. And, you know, no one's confusing him with a first round pick. It doesn't. Now, granted, you had elite play around them. And even look back to Connor Cook, you know, I think people were talking about him possibly being third round or so before the injury when he got hurt with his shoulder. You know, still got drafted, but you can win with a guy that's not a first round quarterback in college football. And, you know, it's done in the trenches. It's done on the defensive side. And the blueprint's there. You know, no one's looking at this Michigan State team from the outside and saying this team's got a chance to be in the CFP this year. But I guarantee inside, that's what they're saying and talking about. They just aren't doing it publicly and as loudly as they were last year. And that's what competitors are supposed to do. And I think Mel Tucker has kind of made that abundantly clear that he wants guys that have that mindset. Now, do I think that Peyton Thorne has that mindset? Yes. But I don't necessarily say that the other guys don't have that mindset either.
Well, and here's the counter to Peyton Thorne. If you're looking to make an argument that somebody else deserves a shot, he talked about the value of experience, what 2 years gives you. And there's no way to get that experience without playing. And at a certain point, it's somebody else's turn. Just because you're the older guy who happened to land in a more ready position at the time that job was open does not mean you get to keep it forever during the other people's job, the other people's eligibility. If the job is close and you have reached your ceiling and it doesn't look like they have, then you have to also consider that. We're obviously this is what we do for a living, and especially me, I tend, you know, I'm going to overanalyze quarterbacks. You know,
it's the glamour position, and it's the central spotlight. So it doesn't matter.
Yes.
And that's the thing, is like it's understandable why people want to see all of these quarterbacks, because they've shown some promise that you wouldn't be at this level if you didn't have that potential. It's readiness within the system, I think, that's kind of the big thing. And, you know, Noah Kim, you could say he's probably ready for a shot if it presents itself, but he also has to show that he's better than the guy that is there. And I think that's kind of what you saw at Michigan in some ways last year, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's, you know, no starting job, I think, is safe. I mean, particularly where they were and making a quarterback switch with the guy still on the roster and then getting back there. I think they see that, you know, coaches know that. Coaches are, if they're paranoid, they're delusional, but they're also incredible thieves. And if they see something work somewhere else, they may do it themselves.
Is there anything else that stood out to you? I mean, it was a hard scrimmage to take a ton from. Like, there were some moments where you saw, you know, a couple of the running backs have made some progress and good moves on the offensive line, but then, you know, the defensive line is not what it will be. We've talked about the secondary. You know, you mentioned the guy that Antonio Gates Jr. has the touchdown catch again. I do think it's important that guys like Gates are part of the mix and are on display in big moments. Like, that's all good news for them, because he had been really not a guy you heard a lot about a year ago.
Tyrell Henry with a really nice one-handed catch. I mean, that wasn't a great throw by Caden Hauser, but that was a heck of a catch, reaching up behind him and taking a hit that, you know, if that's a normal game situation, I don't know if Henry makes that, because Malik Spencer's going in for a kill shot there and trying to jar that ball loose. But in a situation like this, in a practice against your own teammate, you're not doing that per se. It's just how it is these days. It's not, you know, that's a whole argument for another day, whether or not these guys get enough tackling in real game situations with the constant concern for injury. But anyways, those two guys, and I thought Montori Foster had a good day. He looked healthy. He looked more like the guy that we saw 2 years ago, who, when Jalen Naylor was hurt, stepped in and looked like a promising football player for a guy that had played mostly basketball as a young kid. So I don't think there's any concern at the receiver room. You know, as long as Coleman's healthy, I mean, I think, you know, you have a complete game breaker in Coleman, and it's April, so you got a couple months to, if he does have something nagging, to heal. But otherwise, I thought he looked fine. And then, you know, the defensive backs, I mean, they're young. And how much work are they going to get? And that's, again, when you talk about the quarterbacks, you know, what are they seeing when they're going against Jaden Mangum and Malik Spencer, Jaden Mangum, Malik Spencer, and Caleb Coley, these young guys that are in their second year in the program, and you've got fourth year, fifth year quarterbacks they're throwing. I mean, those guys are still learning on the job on the other side of the ball. So, you know, but you can see the raw talents there. You can see that they were, for the most part, in the right positions, making some plays, but it wasn't also like they did anything real exotic. So
I think the guy I'm really intrigued to see this fall against, you know, full fledged defensive line hitting and tackling is Jaren Mangum. And you talked about earlier, Chris, and I think this is dead on, that the guys who look like a Big Ten back. And I think Nathan Carter, I think there are other guys that are there.
Carter right now looks like the starter.
He does. But when you have 6'2", 230 and a guy, that's the type of back, and it was a natural running back.
Yes.
And that's the type of guy that they really haven't had lately. And that sort of,
other than that Walker guy.
Well, I mean, yeah. But he wasn't 6'2". He wasn't 6'2".
He wasn't that size. I get what you're saying. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, and he was, and Kenneth Walker was everything. So, it's a good point. I mean,
Kenneth Walker's now kind of like Bill Brasky. He was about 7'8", 310 right. pounds, and ran a 4.240.
The legend of Kenneth Walker will grow from. And you know what? Most of it is legit, but by the end, it'll be all right.
Here's a great thing. Like, when you think about going into the summer, right? And you think about guys can develop, guys can change, and you start to see things emerge when you get back for preseason camp that maybe weren't there in the spring. I think back to 2 years ago when Peyton Thorne had Jaden Reed and some of the other players out to his house in Naperville, Illinois, and there were some pictures of their workouts that they were working with his dad, Jeff, when he was at North Central College. And there were some pictures that came out from that of Kenneth Walker running sprints with those guys. And he looked like a brick house. You look at this and you're like, this guy looks like nobody I've ever seen. And sure enough, about 2 months later, you saw him running away from everybody against Northwestern. And you're like, oh, yeah, he had a good summer.
My favorite Kenneth Walker quotes were from Xavier Henderson early on when it was first pretty clear that Kenneth Walker was special.
It was after the Northwestern game, I believe.
And he just said, you know, early on, we were like, it was frustrating. It was like, are we this bad defensively or is he this good? Because nobody could tackle him. And one could argue later in the year that they weren't that great. But early on, they were fine defensively. And it was just Walker was absolutely that good. Let's talk some hoops. We'll do more football if anything happens, you know, and we'll do another podcast probably in the coming weeks as there's more roster activity, either with basketball or football, anybody jumps in the portal or guys come in, and it's worth getting into. Last week, for most of the week, basketball took center stage. And which I always love. I love when spring football gets pushed all the way to its spring game before it takes the headlines. But interesting week in that Tyson Walker announced he was coming back. Malik Hall then had his announcement. And then Tom Izzo had his sort of end of year hour-long press conference where he talked a lot about that and the portal and his, you know, his roster and all those things. It is interesting that, you know, a year ago it was like they just don't have enough guys maybe, and now it's like they don't even have a full complement of scholarships. I mean, they have 12 of what could be 13. It's like whoa, this is too many. But I think where that stems from, Chris, is that, I mean, there is an unnatural order of things when you have two guys come back for their COVID year. And so usually, though, if you had 12 or 13, it that would include like two more new freshmen or developmental guys who weren't expecting to play. You have 12 guys who I think are hoping to be part of the rotation, probably 10 at least to expect major minutes. And that's where it gets interesting.
Well, just as kind of like an aside with that, Peyton Thorne still has two more years left, and Noah Kim has three more years left with that after COVID year. So that's there true. Isn't a natural order of things right now in college sports, at least for another couple years, based on the NCAA's decision. And I think coaches are taking advantage of that. I mean, if you're Tom Izzo and you've got the chance to use scholarships on freshmen or unknown commodities versus two guys that you've had in your program now for, you know, 4 years on Malik Hall's case and 2 years in Tyson Walker's case, you're going to go with the known commodity, particularly the known commodities that can really help you in different ways.
Well, and you know, a lot of times you talk about, well, the transfer portal, the one-time transfer rule encourages people to leave, you know, as a reaction, as a reflex. But you know what? I also think what does help sometimes in terms of people staying is you probably don't feel like you have to get on with it. You know, so if you're Noah Kim right now, in the old world where you were going to have to sit out a year, and you've used a redshirt year, so that would really burn you. But in the old world, you might feel like, if I don't win this now, I got to go. Yeah, I got to go. But now, if you're Noah Kim and you don't win it this following year and you don't feel like you're going to ever be the guy at Michigan State, you could leave somewhere and have two more full years left without sitting out. If you're Peyton Thorne and this year goes poorly for you and you get surpassed, you can go somewhere for a year. If you're Caton Hauser, and I know there's pressure on young guys to have it done, and he does not have the extra year. That's the class that starts without having, you know, the extra year. But you don't have to sit out anymore. So, and that sort of, I think, takes the pressure off getting on with it if you feel like you might not, and making a decision too soon. I think in basketball, there probably is, you know, if you're Jackson Kohler and you got like three or four of the centers on the roster, you probably feel, well, it's, and then I think they're selling him on playing some of the four too. You feel like you can let this play out a minute. And you know what? If it's not going to work out a year from now, you're not going to have to sit out. You go somewhere for a couple of years. If you're, you know, I think that is something that's the other side of this that probably does help in certain circumstances.
Yeah. I mean, Pierre Brooks is a great example of that as well. I mean, the writing was pretty clear as his minutes diminished throughout the course of the year to nothing in the NCAA tournament, that they're bringing in guys that are going to be at my position. I've got a chance to go elsewhere and I've got, you know, 2 years to do it and I don't have to sit out. I mean, that's,
and he could have done it a year ago. And in the old world, he might've felt pressure to do it, but he said he let it play out. Okay.
Yep. Now I mean, and here's another case in point. If Malik Hall doesn't have an extra year with COVID, Pierre Brooks might be staying. I mean, that's probably not.
I don't think so.
Probably not. Yeah. Not. I'm saying if you go back in time and there's no transfer portal, there's no immediate eligibility, which obviously changes things on top of that. But if you're in that situation where if you're bringing in a transfer, they're going to have to sit out. Sure, Pierre Brooks would look at it and say, I can stay right away and play some minutes. But, you know,
that's also a mutual decision. So it would have been an interesting conversation if he had wanted to do that.
Yeah. But there are, I mean, you know, this roster, I do think it is fascinating to think that they're going to have to find minutes for guys now after basically being down to an 8-man rotation for much of the year. And that was one of the things that I asked Izzo about, just kind of what he learned, you know, almost like whether he liked giving guys those 30 plus minutes a game. Cause I can't think of a time when he gave that many guys that much run in that short of a rotation. But he also said, these guys are basketball players. They can do it. You know, it's about trying to keep them fresh. And I think the Hogard situation, when you saw how they used him, you know, trying to whittle down his 30 plus and get him into that 25-ish range down the stretch, you saw how much more efficient he was and how much fresher he looked, particularly in the NCAA tournament when he did have to make a lot of runs. So, you know, I thought there was a lot of things to kind of take out of that Izzo press conference, including that, first of all, Malik Hall had foot surgery after the season, which, you know, as I gather, there was a pre-existing injury before high school or when he was in high school that is causing some of the stress reaction. And they expect him to be on the court sometime mid to late summer. He'll be back in plenty of time for the season. That's why they took care of it when they did. And then also that there might be a couple guys that could still test the NBA draft process, which I believe the entry deadline for that is coming up soon. You know, and whether or not they do is that's something completely different, but you know, that's another case in point, like almost in some ways, like the portal, that because they've changed the rules with that, where you can come back to school, you know, some guys that might want to take that look and get a different assessment of where their game's at and what they need to work on, you know, that might be worth their time to do that and then come back.
There's no downside to getting an evaluation, right? I mean, that's the thing. And I think, you know, if I were a Jaden Akins, for example, I would want that evaluation because you're a guy who has an NBA, some NBA tools, put it that way. And I want to know what the league thinks I need. And then, I would go back to my coaches at Michigan State. And if this is what the NBA needs to see from me, then this needs to be incorporated. I mean, I think, you know, Akins, you know, there was a lot of stuff online about the idea that Akins would transfer or be unhappy with Tyson Walker returning. And you know what? To be frank, I don't think, you know, that in October that he was thinking that Tyson Walker was coming back. I do not think that when Jeremy Fears Jr. signed, he thought Tyson Walker was coming back. That doesn't mean those guys aren't willing to compete. That doesn't mean that Michigan State won't build an offense or use Jaden Akins differently next year. They might have last year if not for the injuries. I mean, he missed pretty much all of practice heading into the season, comes back, and then he's out another month. Sort of the cake was baked before he ever got in there. They had to figure out how they were going to win, how they were going to function, and then he joins them. So that'll be different. I just think that, even Tyson Walker, I'd want to know at my size what's important to the NBA for me to get a look. You know, if I'm A.J. Hogard, what do I need to do? Like, because I think the thing for A.J. Hogard, for example, is point guards. You go back to Mateen Cleaves, you go back to Denzel Valentine. If you win at a high enough level in college, you may never be a great pro, but you can still play yourself into a certain draft spot because they want winners once they get out of the lottery. I mean, I don't think anybody ever thought Denzel Valentine was going to be an all pro, but he was the 14th pick. And Mateen Cleaves was the 14th pick. And these guys were, you know, there were always doubts about their athleticism, their health, their whatever, their overall games. But they got into the middle of the first round because of what they did as college players. And I think if you're Hogard, that's the sort of thing you gotta, as a point guard and being consistent and leading a team to winning, you gotta look at.
No, I completely agree with that. And I do think one of the other things that I think Tom Izzo said that I felt really interesting and, you know, was his comparison of Jeremy Fears as a leader to Mateen and Magic. I mean, that's not the kind of praise that he throws around lightly, but there certainly is intent to that, I think, to let a guy know that even though a guy like A.J. Hogard is coming back and, you know, he's going to be the guy more than likely, you've got a big role ahead of you to help this team get to where it needs to go. But for Hogard's standpoint, I agree with you. I mean, it's, you know, I think Hogard's one of those interesting guys that, you know, being a bigger body, you know, he's not Cassius Winston, right? I mean, and, you know, Cassius Winston, if Cassius Winston had A.J. Hogard's body, he'd be on year three of starting in the league right now. But, you know, that's, you know, if A.J. Hogard had Cassius Winston's smoothness about him in some ways, he might be already in the league. But, you know, for what he is as a downhill player, I think the last month of the season should have shown him that he's got that ability if he plays under control and does the things that he did. But he might also need to hear that from someone other than Tom Izzo. And I think that's why the draft process for these guys in particular, the guys who are at that point where you see, oh, well, maybe I can do this and take it to the next level. Sometimes they just need to hear it from someone they haven't heard it from for three straight years.
And sometimes I think the coaches actually like it because it reaffirms what they've been telling them. You know, and yeah. When they hear it from an NBA guy, it's like, oh, my college coach gets this. And
nine times out of 10, that college coach has already heard it from NBA guys.
He's been talking to the NBA guys. Yeah. No, it'll be a fascinating, roster next year. We're going to have all sorts of time to get to that. Well, Moneyball will be something that'll be interesting this summer with the new guys. I think people will be excited about that.
What's more impactful, spring football or Moneyball?
Spring football has more value internally.
Right.
But to the fan base, because it's live and it's fun, and I think it's healthy. Like, one of the great things I like about Moneyball, and bless Desmond Ferguson for having this, is that you think about most places, the crescendo up to football is just endless. It's like, it's just 3 months of 100-day countdown, all the in a place where football matters. Football doesn't matter in July. A month and a half before the season, it's all about hoops. And one thing I've always found entertaining about MSU's fan base and respected in some ways is, even though they care about both very close to equally, I think, they cannot handle two at once. They cannot have their attention on both places. It's a very either or thing. And
I don't think that's an MSU thing. I think that's the few schools that you do have both that are
play
at a high level. I just think that it's impossible to have everybody from day one buy into everything in both sports.
But what I love about the cyclical nature is like, people's minds were completely on basketball last week until the spring game. And then all of a sudden they were completely on football. And, I think in July, early July, late June, when Moneyball starts, people are completely on basketball again. You know, it's a weird thing. And I love it because it stops. Football, there's enough. August is long enough. You don't need July to be intense about football, too.
If the weather on Saturday or Friday and Saturday was like it is today on Monday, I don't know how much there would have been the buzz for spring football either.
No, that's a really good point. But yeah, no, it'll be a fun. Like, anytime there's, people are always intrigued by the freshmen. But you don't always get a class like this. And there is a lot of intrigue throughout it, and for good reason. And I think the thing that Michigan State has going for it this year, and you just never get this, is to have a class that's as good as any you've had in some time, in 7 years really, coming in, and not need a single one of them necessarily to start. Just doesn't happen in college basketball very often. You think about last time, like, they had three of those guys starting the whole year, sometimes four. And they may have a couple of them starting. It may work out that way. But I'm just saying, you got a lot of seasoned dudes who played a lot of big, high level Big Ten and NCAA tournament games coming back to compete. And it's going to be wild. It's going to be fun. So, we will be back with another episode of Spartan Speak in the coming weeks. We'll figure out when it makes the most sense, when something has happened that drives some conversation. Until then, we'll have coverage at freep.com, at lsj.com, and greenandwhite.com. This has been a production of the Lansing State Journal, Detroit Free Press, and USA Today Network. For Chris, for myself, thanks for listening.